maybe early in the morning. But it's always time to go exploring. Welcome to Outdoor Pursuits with yours truly, Jade Quinn McDonald. We are broadcasting through the unceded ancestral traditional territory of the Halkomelem-speaking Musqueam people here on UBC Vancouver campus. Welcome to my two guests, Isaac and Reese. These two are coming from the Nordic Club, the Nordic Ski Thunderbirds Sports Club. Is that correct? Okay.
Yeah,
great. Welcome. So we can probably start off with just a little bit about yourselves. Who are you? What are you studying? And what are you to the club?
My name is Reese Critchlow. I am in my fifth year of the engineering physics program here at UBC. And I am the club lead of the ski team.
My name is Isaac. I am in my fourth year in forestry, forest sciences at UBC. And I'm the fundraising officer on the team.
Sweet. Well, thank you both for being here. How long have you guys been acting executives?
I've been an executive for the past 3 years now. Yeah.
Yeah, same with me. I was the co-club lead with the former club lead, Michael, 2 years ago. Actually, no, I wasn't an exec last year. I was in Haida Gwaii for the
close
fall
enough.
And member at large.
In spirit.
In the spring, yeah.
There you go. Sweet. So, Reese, were you always the lead? Did you come in and steal the show? Or how did you progress?
I was travel and safety in my first year,
okay.
Which is one of our exec roles. And then when Isaac had to go to Haida Gwaii, myself and Maggie Beckner stepped in as club lead, and I've been in that role since.
Okay. Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about what the role of club lead entails?
Yeah. Club lead's kind of just about kind of overseeing most of the things, kind of steering the ship a little bit from a high level, trying to kind of run meetings for the executive team, keep kind of everything on track, keep up to deadlines, and then also just kind of serving as having kind of, you know, the, I don't know, 3,000-foot view of the team, kind of like what's going on with training or logistics or various things that are happening in various exec roles, and trying to kind of make sure that, you know, the vibe of the team is trending in the right direction.
Nice. Yeah, that's great. How does it feel to have a shared role in that position, or did it?
It was good.
Yeah.
There were definitely, like, we talked a lot last year in kind of the transition of forming this year's exec team of whether we wanted to continue with a co-club lead arrangement. Maggie's graduating halfway through the year, so we couldn't do it with Maggie. But we've definitely noticed some pros and cons to having a co-club lead arrangement. But I think both, like, doing it solo and doing it with a partner have been really positive experiences.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. So what's fundraising officer all about?
I'm a bit more focused than Reese's, that's for sure, on specific objectives, and that's to rake in that dough. So, we're all financially self-sustaining club, all the Thunderbird Sport clubs are. Besides the $1,000 match we get from the office, like, all the money that we are spending as a club to get people to races, to train, to subsidize athlete costs is coming from our fundraisers.
Right.
It's a really important role, and we've had some great fundraising officers in the past, and I'm happy to step into it this year and hopefully score us a little bit of cash before I graduate.
Sweet. Yeah. So I kind of start with the exec today because you guys have been awarded a few different things over the years. That's great. Congratulations. What do you feel like helps you guys stand out as an executive? Is there anything in particular?
I think we just really try and care a lot about the team. Mm-hmm. And I think we do put in a lot of effort as an executive team. We have a lot of moving parts. And we really try to kind of do our best and keep the team really accessible and inclusive. I think kind of the way that we're nominated for that award at the end of the year is through our athletes on the team kind of providing feedback. And I think that what is shown and what we strive for is to really make the team a really great community and a great place that's also run very smoothly. And I think that that's kind of the main thing that that contributes to us doing well in that regard. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I'd also add that I think Nordic skiing in particular is something that people don't really come to UBC exactly to Nordic ski because Vancouver is not like the most, I don't know, it's not the Nordic skiing capital of the country, like let's say that. So I feel like the people on the team and the people who we get to be execs with are like really bleed the sport and like are really enthused about it. And I think that that makes a huge contribution to like, what we can do as execs and just how the whole the team operates. Yeah.
Pays to be core sometimes.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Can you, we'll get to the sport eventually, but what's the difference between the clubs at UBC and the sports teams?
Yes. Well, like varsity teams are their own like separate branch. They're not, are they, actually you probably know this better.
Yeah, I know this is kind of getting kind of into the weeds a little bit, but so varsity clubs are under the Department of Athletics. We're under recreation. So we're kind of this middle ground between kind of like a just a standard AMS sports club, let's say, and a varsity team. So we get a little bit of funding. We get a lot of administrative support from the department. Kind of the big ad that I think gets talked a lot about is we get to actually compete with the Thunderbird logo on our stuff.
Right.
And so we're kind of this middle ground of kind of self-run teams.
Sweet. Yeah. That's great. Do you feel like the fact that you guys aren't a varsity team attracts a different demographic?
Well, definitely it opens the door to like us being more inclusive and I think lowers the barrier to entry significantly, which is a huge pro.
Yeah.
And yeah, as we're like, we get to have tryouts and we really never have the case where we need to like turn people away completely.
Oh, that's great.
So that's a huge asset. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that like something we've really talked about a lot in the past and like how we've decided to steer the team over the past couple years has like one of the big points we always say is that a lot of the strength or most of the strength of our team comes from having a really diverse group of people. And I think that being a Thunderbird sport club allows us to have that diversity of people that I just don't think that we could have had if we remained a varsity sport.
Cool. Yeah, that's great. Doors open to most folks. At tryouts, what do you guys look for? Obviously athleticism. If you guys aren't turning anyone away, what are kind of the things that you're thinking are going to benefit the club in general?
I wouldn't say that we, you know, like we do have some criteria.
Yeah.
We do look for some prior ski experience. It wouldn't necessarily be 100% correct to say that we don't turn anyone away.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's all right. But I think kind of within the team, we kind of do a bit of self-selection of who goes to races a little bit, just because that is a bit of a kind of a bar to meet a little bit sometimes. Mm. But kind of, you know, beginning of the season, we have to select our roster basically by the end of September. And so we can't really put people on skis and assess that.
Yeah, I was wondering actually, tryouts, it was like the second week of September this year. Yeah, you don't really know what they're going to be like on skis. Are they like on roller skis or you're like, okay, these guys look like they can probably push.
We just do like a team run.
Yeah, okay.
And like, yeah, what Reese said, like show us a video of you skiing.
Okay, nice.
And that we have a conversation with each athlete about their goals for the season.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of go from there. But yeah, we don't have the number of roller skis that would be to get everybody on skis.
That'd be pretty funny to watch.
Yeah, it'd be sweet. Yeah. Actually, I was roller skiing yesterday and somebody rolled down their window to laugh at me.
What?
They didn't even have anything to say. Man. They just wanted to laugh at
me.
Open window.
That's funny.
Oh, yeah. Brutal.
And I feel like Isaac was saying that we kind of have these like conversations with people mm-hmm. at the beginning of the year. And I think that like kind of our tagline this year was the conversations aren't being like, are you on the team or not? It's about finding the right place for people mm-hmm. on the team.
Okay. Yeah. So is there like kind of a starting line who's, they're always kind of going to the races, and then there's people who maybe just want to practice?
Yeah. So this year we have kind of a bit of a structure with a competition group and a practice roster. Mm-hmm. That's somewhat done through kind of some of our feedback and a little bit through self-selection. We're still like, that's kind of a new structure to us this year, and we're still kind of working through all the details of that. And as we've, you know, seen people on snow, we've kind of been like, okay, you know, maybe it'd be good to get you in a couple races and different things like that. But yeah, that's kind of how we do it.
Sweet. Yeah. And then there's training camp.
Yeah.
That all, I was combing the Instagram training camp videos highlight for me. Is it always in Silver Star?
We like to go to Silver Star because it's the best.
Nice.
But we try to keep a couple options open for ourselves because usually, I mean, every year it's like, are we going to get snow? Are we going to get mm-hmm. snow? Reese was all stressed out this year. I said, this happens every year and then we get snow. But no, it is a bit stressful beforehand. We don't know where. But yeah, we've also gone to, you guys went to Apex last year.
Nice.
Yeah.
Which was, it seemed like also a great camp. But I think Silver Star is always our preference because just got more trails, and it's just really pretty there.
Nice.
Yeah, I think everybody loves it. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a few days.
Yeah, it's just the duration of reading break.
Oh, great.
So we were there for 4 nights.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Nice. And what do you guys get up to? It's kind of the first time you guys are in a group on skis. What did it look like this year?
Yeah, we show up on, basically we ski 2 times a day.
Okay.
And in between we're kind of studying mm-hmm. or kind of chilling, having the time to rest.
Eating,
mm-hmm. lots yeah. of eating, yeah. lots of food, lots of bread.
Yeah.
but yeah, we'll kind of have, you know, a morning workout. There are two techniques for cross-country skiing. There's classic skiing and skate skiing, so usually we'll do one of the techniques in the morning and we'll do one of the techniques in the afternoon. And one of the big focuses on the camp is to get some volume in, but then also to get in some kind of higher intensity efforts while we have the chance and kind of just get people used to going fast on snow.
Nice.
Silver Star is at elevation too, so that's nice. It gets a little extra training benefit. Yeah.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
We have a time trial always and the end of training camp, which is always a highlight too. Just get people in their suits and putting in a race effort again. It's nice to get one under the belt.
Nice.
Yeah.
So does everyone get to travel to races, whether or not they're on the team, the race team, or are the practice kind of the practice skiers staying at home?
Yeah. So kind of the structure we had this year and kind of the main reason that we put together this structure this year was that we had 24 people at training camp this year, so we're moving with big groups of people mm-hmm. and there kind of gets a point where especially kind of one of our main bottlenecks is accommodation.
Yeah.
And imagine. So it's always been really nice to have everybody under one roof for the camp. And so this year what we did was said that you know, competition group people had the first stab at it. But we had some space left over, and so those who wanted to come on the practice group were able to come along.
That's great.
And so, like, we really don't like to have to kind of set these rules,
mm-hmm.
But it does just kind of stop us from having, like, really unmanageable sizes of people or
yeah.
groups of people.
Understandable.
Yeah.
For sure. So getting into a little bit more of cross-country skiing at its core. How did you guys start? How'd you guys get into the sport?
I'm a bit of a late bloomer, to be honest. I mean, my mom's Californian, my primary parent's Californian, so she didn't really she didn't know what skiing was and didn't have any inkling of putting me into like skiing when we were I was growing up in Minnesota, but I met some friends in middle school who were really into it, and I was over at their houses a lot, and their mom was the coach of the high school team, and she was like, yeah, you should join as an eighth grader. So I started, and like I learned how to ski on the high school team in Minneapolis, and I really loved it, and yeah, continued to race, and became really, really involved in the high school team. And then I came to UBC, and I didn't expect to keep skiing, to be honest. I didn't even bring my skis, so. but I was lucky enough to stumble. Well, actually, I got to shout out Matthew Broder for getting me out to nice. My first practice, and
nice.
and yeah, getting me involved in the UBC team. So that's my start. Yeah,
nice.
And a side note for that, there's actually kind of a funny anecdote about Isaac joining the team for the first time. Was that I forget who it was, but I think somebody said, "There's no way he's staying. He's way too cool to be here."
Nobody said that. I brought gushers to the first practice because I was like really hungry. And then I think that was a selling point, I think, of my character. I don't know. People held on to that one. It stuck with the execs of that year for sure. And they were like, "Oh, it's the gusher kid." I was like handing them out. We were doing core, yeah.
Yeah. This guy's way too cool.
No.
Yeah, but I guess where I started skiing, I was 4 years old. My parents put me in the Jackrabbits program, which is kind of it's part of the kind of Canadian cross-country skiing model for kids. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just been skiing ever since.
Sweet ass. Sweet. Okay. Well, we're kind of coming up on a time that maybe people would like to hear some music.
Yeah.
I think.
That sounds great.
Do you want to say some words about
here? Yeah, which song are you going to play first?
Do you have a recommendation or should we go for the Oki one?
Yeah, let's go to the Oki one. Yeah. Okay. So, okay, this artist is the brother of the fastest skier in the world. His name is Johannes Hoslot Kleiva. And this is his brother Ola. I found out about Ola and his DJ tag Oki when I was watching Johannes's vlogs. He's been a vlogger for many years. Actually, he's done now, but I feel like, yeah, 5-6 years ago, peak Kleiva vlogs. So yeah, he would get featured occasionally. Kleiba would go visit him at his shows, and yeah, this is his song. That's a little bit of a slant rhyme.
Yeah, no, it's sweet.
But yeah,
here we go. This is "Rather Be" by Oki.
I don't wanna bang my heads together. Let's see here. Blend equal parts science and stories. Add a few shakes of music and soundscape, and wrap it all up in a big question. How can we see this more than human world in a new light and take part in shaping a healthy Anthropocene? Catch Future Ecologies every Sunday at 8 a.m. on CITR.
Are you someone in recovery? Someone struggling with addiction or disordered eating? Or are you simply curious to explore your relationship to alcohol, drugs, and other types of addictive behaviors? The UBC Student Recovery Community is a safe space to connect with others. The SRC provides many types of support, such as drop-in hours, recovery meetings, one-on-one support, and even has a dedicated recovery lounge. The SRC supports all pathways of recovery, from harm reduction to abstinence and everything in between. You can learn more at recovery_UBC on Instagram. And you can also contact the community at src.recovery@ubc.ca. Remember, you're not alone.
Looking for the perfect night out? UBC Fashion Club is bringing the ultimate throwback party to Beaumont Studios on Thursday, December 7th.
Indie Sleaze Night!
A 19-plus rave from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. What's Indie Sleaze? It's a time machine to the wild Tumblr and MySpace days, when messy eyeliner, thrifted graphic tees, and pure, unfiltered fun ruled the scene.
We've got a killer DJ lineup featuring DJ Trustworthy, Leo, Nick, and DJ Crown Jewel, spinning a variety of styles all night long.
And the dress code? Anything goes. Skinny jeans, bleached roots, vintage jackets, bring your best Indie Sleaze energy and show us what you've got. Tickets are selling fast, so hit the link in our Instagram bio at FashionClubUBC now to grab yours. Indie Sleaze Night, happening Thursday, December 7th at Beaumont Studios from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. Get ready to party like it's 2012. Don't miss it.
Welcome back to CITR 101.9 FM. This is Outdoor Pursuits with Jade Quinn McDonald and my two guests, Reese and Isaac, from the Nordic Ski Team at UBC. Over the next few minutes here, we're going to chat about what the race circuit looks like for these guys. So, as a student-led club, Reese, are you kind of the one entering the team into race circuits and things like that, or is it already done?
Not necessarily. We kind of, as an executive team, every year kind of select what races we're going to go to.
Okay.
Everybody, all athletes on the team register themselves for races. Nice. They're all kind of like open registration. But yeah, usually kind of that process, I guess, that you're talking about is just kind of us sitting around a table looking at the calendar for the year ahead and thinking, what races are best suited for us and where would we have the most fun, really?
Nice. Is there a race that you've gone to once and never again?
I don't think so.
No.
I'm trying to think. No.
That's good.
Did we ever go? No, we never went to. What was a BC Cup? There was one in PG, but nobody went. Actually, there was one in Manning Park, no, but we go to the Manning Park Kulapit every year.
Yeah.
I don't know. There was 1 year where only one person went to the race. They just drove themselves there, and they won, and they drove back. Yeah, yeah. Shout out Ludo. Yeah,
that's awesome. So, do you guys typically kind of sweep the podium?
Well, we have yes, but in
every
certain
category.
Age categories. Sweet. And if I'm being honest, mm-hmm. I mean, there's not other university teams in BC who have competitive Nordic ski teams. So
really,
so we have the chokehold on that one.
Okay. So there's no other university teams.
No. Okay. Yeah, it's a bit of a,
well, not in BC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A bit of a light asterisk, but, yeah. And it's something we've been wanting and we've been mm-hmm. pushing for.
Yeah, I'm actually quite surprised.
Yeah, we've always been wanting to see a team at UBCO.
Yeah.
It's a little bit harder for, like, UVic. There's always kind of talks of UNBC every mm-hmm. year, but it never quite materializes.
If anybody from UBCO or UNBC is listening, you should start a Nordic ski team.
Start Nordic ski.
Yeah.
Yeah.
it's a blessing and a curse because then we get nice podium pictures, but also it's always more fun to have competitions.
So. Yeah, no doubt. So, so in the age category that you guys sit in, do any like independent racers come in, or is it typically just you guys?
There are some. There will be people who are training locally in mm-hmm. BC, kind of from, I guess, kind of the elite sport perspective mm-hmm. in Canada. Yeah. There's three main training centers, and none of them are in BC right now.
Okay.
So we don't have some of those people. There are some people that are still kind of training at a really high mm-hmm. level in British Columbia, but most of them are kind of in Alberta or Ontario or in Quebec.
Right.
But then that also kind of our competitive landscape kind of inverts itself when we go to nationals as well.
Yeah, right. What's that like?
It's great. Yeah, it's really good. It's really fun to race the other teams, and it shows that we are only racing ourselves, I feel like, sometimes at nationals, because then we get this whole competitive door opened up to us, and we definitely have room to grow.
yeah, and it's just actually very fun to be able to race against other university teams.
Yeah.
It was a shame this year that there was no team sprint at nationals in Ottawa. There was a kind of a distinct lack of snow, and they canceled that event.
Mm.
But in that event, that's like the only, actually kind of really the only real race where we actually get to compete like against other universities.
Gotcha.
All the other races at nationals, they just race everybody together, whether you're in a university or not.
Okay.
And then they just kind of extract the results and be kind of like, okay, here's who was actively enrolled in a university. Here's the kind of a sub list. But the team sprints actually like university against university. And that's really fun. And we've had some fun results out of that too.
Yeah, for sure. We don't have NCAA or anything. So that's kind of our one thing of the year to go head to head.
Cool. Yeah. Is it always in Ottawa?
No. It kind of rotates.
Yes and no.
Yes and no. I think if you look at the last 6 years, like three have been in Ottawa or something like that. Asterisk, one got canceled for COVID.
Okay,
but
this
year will be in Canmore. They try and kind of go back and forth, Eastern, Western Canada, but sometimes...
sometimes Western Canada is Thunder Bay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So throughout all your races, do you guys have one or two in particular that come to mind as like, that was my best race ever, this is what made me stick with the sport, this is why I want to compete? Or just fun?
Yeah, I mean, one of the races that I always enjoy the far and away the most is the Reno Keski Salmi Lopit and Salmon Arm, which is like a...
Can you say that again?
Yeah, sorry. It's somebody's name. Reno Keski Salmi is the guy's name.
Okay,
and then
sweet.
The Lopit is the name
okay,
of the race. Okay,
gotcha.
Yeah, and skiing the like long distance kind of open entry races are called Lopits. And so you'll hear that thrown around. But yeah, it's a 34K classic race, classic only, in Salmon Arm that I feel like... is a big highlight of the year for me, because I love classic skiing, and I also love skiing longer distances. And the course is great. It's really lovely. I feel like it's just a good atmosphere at the race always. And you get beef on a bun afterward.
Yum.
Yum. Yeah. So I feel like those races are always big highlights of the season for me. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of one that really stands out. I think Nationals last year was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Despite kind of the no snow. I think there have been a lot of really fun BC Cups.
Totally.
I think it's just fun where we get races that have a lot of the team there. Mm. And especially kind of there have been some races where some of the team members are kind of going head to head. And I think those are kind of fun because it's kind of fun to have that competition, kind of have a little bit of a little bit of tension.
Nice.
Yeah, that's yeah, the for way. Sure.
Okay, cool. Do your families ever come watch races?
Well, my family lives pretty far away, so they've never come. But I did have a good, really awesome group of friends come up and watch one of the races in my first year.
Awesome.
Which was pretty fun.
That was pretty wild.
Yeah, that was wild.
For context, they had a massive sign. It was, like, stretched, like, 5 meters plus long.
I was a little embarrassed, but I was also really stoked.
Crazy.
Yeah. I didn't do very well.
My parents, despite living in Vancouver, they haven't come out, or when I was in high school, they came out to more races. Mm-hmm. They haven't had a chance since I've been at UBC, but I'm pushing for them to come out this year because this will be my last year racing.
Nice. So more generally, like, out of all the sports that exist in the world, Nordic skiing, it's beautiful, it's on snow, it's pretty fun when you're going downhill. I feel like also sometimes it's a struggle. What makes you guys stick with it? Is it like the endorphins that you get after working out, or the cold nip on your nose when it's negative 30?
I think one of the things is, or I know it's going to sound corny, but like I think it's always the people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons that we've usually left the door pretty open to people on the team is kind of one of our trademarks is you got to be kind of a special person to want to come and cross-country ski at university. And I think like just kind of the community that gets built around every ski team is always really unique and really special. And I think that's kind of what keeps me coming back. But then also kind of from more of a sport context, it's just kind of fun. Mm-hmm. Like it's, I don't know, kind of, yeah, it's a lot of suffering, but you work hard, you get a great workout in. But it's not kind of like running where it's just kind of, I don't know, running or a lot of other sports kind of feel like a suffer fest the whole time.
Yeah.
Whereas skiing really has space for kind of just fun stuff.
Yeah, well, like compared to running, I feel like running gets a lot of flack, but like, imagine you're running, but then you're going twice as fast, and it's, like, beautiful, and you get to, like, change up your technique, so, you know, you're not, like, just running. You're also, like, switching it up a little bit. I love the people, but also I find just, like, it's so satisfying that there's no feeling in the world like nailing a wax call. Like, and having great wax. I love waxing, but it is so it's so satisfying. I don't know, something about it to me, I guess in particular, I just really get excited about it. What?
Heard it here first. Yeah, the wax nerding keeps out about him around. That's sweet. Cool. Okay, well, talking a bit more about this community, what's it like to have new people integrate? Are you guys, you're open-armed, you're saying, come in, even if you can't ski that well, we'll work on what experience you have?
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, for the most part, how we do things. Like, we definitely prefer that people have a little bit of ski experience mm-hmm. under their belt, but once we kind of get people in the door, then it's kind of, okay, let's throw away kind of all these predispositions about ski ability and try and really integrate people into the community as much as possible. And it's something we're still kind of actively working on and something I think we can always, you know, seek improvement on. I think we really do try as an exec team to try and kind of fold and mix everybody as to make them feel welcome on the team and make them feel as much of a part of the team as possible.
Nice.
Yeah, totally. I think a big strength is that we try to keep keep things new and yeah, keep groups new and car groups and I don't know, yeah, room assignments and at races and stuff in the accommodations. And yeah, I mean, it's something that every club, no matter what, needs to strive for, I think, is inclusion of new members. And I think we've had a good track record. It doesn't mean that we can rest. No.
Yeah. Never rest.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's sweet. So did you get a lot of newcomers this season?
Yeah, I think we had like a pretty average entry class this year, probably.
It was like 8 or something? Or?
Yeah, something around there.
To be honest, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't have the precise metric, but yeah, probably somewhere around that range.
Cool. Yeah, and you didn't have to turn anybody away this year?
No.
Which is historically bigger. I mean, we've been growing and growing. Yeah. And I mean, my first year, we had 3 people
who were
new. And then the year before that, there was like, I mean, it was COVID, but essentially 1, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, the team is much bigger now, like twice the size that it was like 3 or 4 years ago. So
sweet.
That's exciting. Yeah.
Cool. And does it attract kind of first and second years, or are you looking more at upper year students? There's a variety.
It's a mix. Nice. It's a range. Yeah. We've had people come in their last year and their 5th year come in and join. We've had, you know, we always have a bunch of first years. Mm-hmm. We have grad students.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about you guys graduating soon. Reese, you're going to be gone. You're here this, I guess, winter term next year, term one.
Yeah.
And then you're going to be gone. Do you have any hopes for who replaces, not who, but what, you know, what characteristic you're looking for in a club lead next year?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a little bit virtuous to be.
We're dreaming.
To look at that. I want them to be a clone of me. I think it's just about someone who, you know, is, you know, willing to, you know, uphold some kind of key values of the team, but then also put their own spin on it. And it's, you know, I think that it's something that we've thought about a lot and we think about a lot is how we're going to keep the team sustainable in our growth. And that's, you know, partially why we introduced a structure like the competition group this year was that it was just a little bit unattainable for us to like bring 35 people to a race weekend and we'd kind of burn out the exact team like that. So, yeah, I think like, you know, it's a conversation that comes up a lot in our exec team meetings about like, you know, we will look at the roster sometimes and be like, OK, who's going to be here in 3 years?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the team going to look like? How can we shape the team or encourage people to kind of rise to the occasion given these given kind of what our team looks like right now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I agree with everything you said. I don't have too much to add. But.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah. Do you see the club continuing to grow? Is there a cap on it? You gonna maybe have like a really practice team? Maybe you come to races sometimes. Full race team.
I think there's some kind of carrying capacity that is like reached with how what we can, reasonably organize the logistics for and and the interest there. So I think that's just kind of a natural law. I don't think it has to be like a hard cap, but
we've like in the past we've kind of discussed like for kind of that competition racing group kind of being around, you know, somewhere to 20 to 25. That seems to be kind of our capacity and that's kind of where we're at right now, but
cool. So I did have a question in here about climate change and how it's affecting skiing. Have you guys seen any impacts to the sport due to, you know?
1,000%. Yeah, I think it's like staring you in the face, like blatantly obvious. I mean, last year was an anomaly for everyone, I think, in terms of not an anomaly, but like low snow year for everyone. But yeah, we didn't ski at Cypress like – hardly any last year. I didn't get up once.
I didn't get up either.
Yeah. There was not a lot of snow. And then we had nationals where there was also like it was, what, 5 degrees and raining and yeah.
We had like a, what, 2K loop to ski on, and yeah. that was it?
Oh. Yeah. And like even then, 3 years ago at Whistler Nationals, they were like, I mean, they'd dump in this like fertilizer stuff on the course to keep the snow from melting, which is insane. Yeah. I had never seen that before. I mean, granted, I didn't grow up skiing on the coast, but yeah, it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, and like it comes in, like ski conditions come in kind of cycles. Like it does ebb and flow. Like you know, it's 2 years ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago now. Training camp was like all the terrain was open at Silver Star. We had everything available to us, and it was great. Like we didn't even have to sweat about whether the camp would happen or not. And last year, we had like 3 accommodations booked at 3 different places. Whoa. Leading up to it. And we made the call like a week before. And it was, you know, just kind of on the brink of whether we'd actually be able to ski. And so I think that, like, you know, there are kind of these oscillations, but I think that everybody recognizes that the trend is in the negative direction for us right now, and we are kind of up against the wall. And I think, you know, there are, like, I don't know, Isaac was talking about wax. Like, there are different waxes for different types of conditions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And as we've seen over time, it's like, oh, my goodness, for these, like, cold, optimal conditions that, you know, people have been used to be, like, kind of the most common wax for, like, many years, you know, we haven't touched that wax in the box for a couple years.
Yeah, you know? Which is crazy. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you get your El Nino, La Nina, like, oscillations, but mm-hmm. it's pretty clear, yeah, when you look at the wax box, and when you just look at pictures, I feel like, of previous seasons, it's really easy to tell, like, yeah, climate change is slowly killing the sport, which is really sad, but yeah.
Yeah, sorry to dampen the mood there. A lot of clubs have like environmental reps. Do you guys have something like that in mind for the future?
Not necessarily right now.
Yeah.
I think it's something we just try and keep in mind. Mm-hmm. But we are constrained by having like a 5 exec cap on the team as per the Thunderbird Sports Clubs. Gotcha. But it definitely wouldn't be the worst idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, if every executive has it in the back of his or her mind, then I think you're halfway to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do feel like kind of just being like, oh, yeah, we have a sustainable vibe to the team is a bit of a cop-out. And it's definitely something that we could have a bit more formal, I guess.
Cool. Yeah, well, I assume that this sport attracts people who like being outside. What role does connecting with nature play in your decision to do this sport, as opposed to, you know, basketball, for example?
I mean, that's what really draws me to it, I think, is just I had went through this time in my skiing career the past couple of years where I was very disenchanted with racing, and all I really kept saying was I just want to go outside and tromp around in the snow and ski with my friends and have fun. And, you know, that's how I fell in love with skiing, like in northern Minnesota, just going out in the Boundary Waters and going for these long, like ungroomed skis across lakes and through the, you know, Canadian Shield kind of type thing. That's the purest form of skiing, in my opinion, is just going outside and putting on your old fish scales and just walking around. On top of snow that you wouldn't be able to walk around without skis on, you know? But then, yeah, it always brings you back to the team, and we try to keep those values pretty core too. And yeah, that's, I'm still here and I like racing again. I got this wave of motivation in the past year. Yeah. I don't know. What would you add anything to that?
Yeah. I don't know. I think that like, became a little bit jaded towards, like, kind of, I definitely took, I think, the nature aspect of skiing for granted at points in my life. Like, it was just kind of like, okay, Cyprus was a place that we ski.
Which is insane because this guy grew up skiing, like going to glaciers to go training.
Okay, I did appreciate that. But yes.
And like go skiing on a glacier in the middle of summer. And like that is unheard of in the Midwest.
Yeah. Welcome to Western BC.
Yeah. But I think, you know, there are definitely, I think skiing really stands out as a sport that's really gorgeous and really beautiful and really gives you that opportunity to connect with nature. Like I had a little detour in my second year to the rowing program, to the novice rowing program here at UBC. And one of the things that I missed about skiing was, like, you know, you kind of just row in the same place. Mm-hmm. Like, and you're kind of just in these very, like, man-made environments usually, at least here at UBC. And I really missed just kind of, like, the creativity, I guess, of, like, skiing and you kind of being able to pick your own trails and, like, you know, go wherever you want and see these beautiful views and see these beautiful sights. And so, yeah.
I feel like there's also just, like, a definite connection to it. I'm bringing it back to waxing again. But when you have, like, you have a more intimate relationship with the snow. getting to know, like, you know, what kind of snow is going to work with what kind of wax, and that's like such a day-to-day call, you know, that changes every day. So I think that is a big component of it. You have to go and, like, actually, you know, pay attention to what temperature it is and, like, what the snow looks like and what it did last night. Yeah, I don't know.
That's great. Yeah, awesome. I like the outdoors too. Yeah, but sometimes I just like to go down, just down.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, yeah, I think, I mean, I was interested in Nordic once upon a time, but
I remember that. Yeah.
I think that's where I met you for the first time.
For sure. Well, there's always a place for you.
Thanks. Who knows, maybe next time I'll be the guest. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about affordability. How are you guys, I know you're the fundraising officer, how are you guys paying for all these things?
Yeah, so as I kind of alluded to at the top of the program, we're financially self-sustaining. Mm-hmm. So as is all the Thunderbird sport clubs, and so we got to fundraise all the money that we are able to put onto trips and races and subsidizing, like, passes and merchandise, race suits for the team. The following year, all that money is raised in the previous year. And that's kind of, that, I mean, that's the core tenet of my job. And, by doing all that fundraising, our hope is that, we can continue to accept, you know, new people, and, get as many people to training camp as we can, get as many people to the races as we can, and try to keep our athlete costs as low as possible. But, obviously it's a big struggle because, we don't get a ton of help. So, yeah, I mean, I would be remiss not to plug our current fundraiser right now. We have a holiday silent auction up online. The website is it's a Galabid, app.galabid.com/UBC Nordic 2024.
One more time for the people.
app.galabid.com/UBC Nordic. That's UBCNORDIC 2024.
Awesome.
And yeah, there's lots of great items on there. There's places to just donate to the team. And then there's also some pretty cheap, like, ski related or just, like, gift cards, items on the site. Yeah, you can go bid on those and score yourself a nice holiday gift or a holiday gift for your friend or your family. And all the proceeds go to, go to subsidizing those trip and race fees and, future costs of the team. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a super interesting framework. You guys kind of set the next year up for success.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little bit of a legacy in itself.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And it makes our budgeting a little bit easier as well.
Right.
Because we know what we have. Yeah.
Yeah, have you ever had to dip into kind of that year's fundraising to?
No,
yeah, because, I mean, the plan is made based on what we had the year before, so, yeah.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, you heard it here, folks. Go get your gifts for friends and family. Yeah, do you guys have any closing remarks or shout-outs that you'd like to give?
I mean, that was the main one. That was silent auction for me.
Yeah, for sure.
I guess I'll shout out my mom because this is the first time I'm on the radio.
Woo!
I don't know. I feel like she would be tuning in if she is.
Yeah, I'll shout out my parents too.
Nice.
Yeah, shout out to the team. Yeah.
Yeah, shout out the team. Love you guys. And birds.
And birds. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah, well, I think we'll wrap it up there.
Yeah.
Thank you both for your time.
Yeah.
I am going to play the second song.
The Birkebeiner song?
Yeah.
Okay, awesome.
Do you have any words on that?
Yeah, I have some words, of course. so Birkebeiner is the Norwegian word for ski race. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know. That's my understanding. As a non-Norwegian speaker, that's what it is.
Nice.
There's lots of Birkebeiners around the world. But the one that's near and dear to my heart is the American Birkebeiner, which happens every year in Hayward, Wisconsin. And there's this kind of running joke across members of the Berkey community of Berkey fever. And you get Berkey fever and you start getting really excited for winter to go skiing, to ski the Berkey. And so I was listening to a Berkey Fever playlist this morning, and this song was on it. It's called Birkebeiner. It's all in Norwegian, so I have no idea what it means. Hopefully it's, like, kosher.
Yeah.
But
should be.
But then there's also some, like, Birkebeiner also – Berkey has its lore as well, right? Like,
yeah.
It was all about this, like – I think there was, like, the last king who was, like, a baby – of like Norway or something like that.
We're really not doing it.
Yeah. No, it's great.
Start.
Something like that. And then
Prince Haakon.
Okay.
Yeah, Prince Haakon. That was
oh, really?
The, that was
okay,
the kid's name.
Idea.
Yeah, the baby.
Yeah. And they put him in a backpack and skied him across during a war or something like that.
Yeah, they were like, I don't know.
So it's deep.
Yeah.
Some deep Nordic legend.
Yeah, it's kind of like Marathon.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
It
kinda
is.
Like Marathon.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah.
Etymology.
I don't know if you want to talk maybe just really quick about like kind of how to find out more information about
Please
the team.
Do,
yeah.
Yeah.
So we have an Instagram page.
I love your Instagram.
And, yeah.
It's great.
And a TikTok that's firing as well.
Nice.
Yeah. Shout out Chloe.
Yeah. Shout out Chloe, who's our marketing and communications officer who runs all that. We also have our website, which I think you can just Google UBC Nordic Skiing. It's a, mm-hmm. it's a athletics and recreation page. And that has a lot of information. And then anybody listening who, you know, maybe thinking of, you know, join the team next year or something like that. Yeah, we have some information there on how to join and kind of, you know, our baseline criteria is that, you know, you kind of know how to skate in classic mm-hmm. ski, are willing to show up to practice. You know, prior racing experience is preferred. And yeah, that's kind of, yeah, how we do things.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah. So keep on the lookout for that. Folks, it's a great team.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go learn more. I hope Berkey fever infects you all.
love electronic music sessions. Run for them life when I step into the jungle. We offer DJ workshops, open decks, pop-up parties, and more. Follow our socials such as Instagram, Discord, or join us through email, ubcelectronica@gmail.com.
Hi there. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from UBC Vancouver campus located on the unceded ancestral and traditional lands of the Hunkaminim-speaking Musqueam people. We honor the ancestral and ongoing care for this land by the host nations. Media practices are often rooted in white gaze, and we recognize that it is our responsibility to shift our approach and move towards radical empathy. While we broadcast from UBC Vancouver campus, our listenership extends to the unceded lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations and beyond. We encourage you to check out native-land.ca, that is native-land.ca, to learn more about whose land and territory you live and work on or may be visiting. Thank you.